Welcome everyone to the interview with Ira Winkler. Welcome Ira, nice having you.
Thanks for having me.
Now, for the people who don't know you, you're SISSP, president and co-founder of Security Mentum, am I right?
Yeah, it's Secure Mentum, but yes, people can find me easily.
Yeah.
And don't forget the more important, well, right now, author of You Can Stop Stupid. So
yeah,
that's my
yeah,
latest
yeah.
project.
And you also have a book called Security Awareness for Dummies, right?
That one's actually in the works. I'm up to writing chapter
yeah.
8, but it should be out by the summer, depending on the Dummies Press rollout schedule.
Yeah. Now, thank you for being here with us. You're the man who was named the Awareness Crusade by SEO Magazine. So you're really a security professionals who we need to hear about. Now, shall we start with the questions?
Oh, please.
Could you tell us what does your job involve?
So primarily my job involves what I call the human aspects of security. That is what my company focuses on. A lot of that obviously involves the creation of awareness programs, but it also involves it also involves performing espionage simulations, which is a combination of social engineering, physical security, hacking, and so on. I actually use former special forces and intelligence officers to perform these tests. So it really is as close to an espionage simulation as you can get. I also investigate a variety of different events, including, because a problem is a lot of attacks against organizations result from a user failing in one form or another.
Yeah.
And before I don't want to blame the user, because for the user to fail, the whole system failed, but it involves a user failing. And many organizations might call in one of the premier groups like a CrowdStrike or whoever else in the world to investigate. But after they go away, the ways in other words, the people are still the same as they were before. So the bad guys get back in. So organizations call me in to figure out, why did the people get in and how can we effectively stop it? It's not a matter of just telling people, the attacker sent you a phishing message, so don't click on phishing messages. Because doing one of the frustrations I have with the field is there's this misperception that if someone, if someone fails at awareness, the solution is more awareness. It couldn't be further from the truth, because you have to think, why was the user in a position where they needed to be aware first? And then even if they were unaware or maybe perhaps malicious or whatever, why didn't the system actually expect those malicious or unaware actions to take effect? So, it involves a variety of different things where awareness is a piece, but it's only a piece of the overall puzzle. And that's, again, really comes down to the root of the overall failing of most awareness programs and most security programs, where they think you can throw a tactic, which awareness is a tactic, at a significant problem, as opposed to a comprehensive solution.
In our Discord server, we talk about it and call it red teaming. You put yourself in a position of attacker and think of ways how you can break in or compromise some company. You basically do the physical pen testing or penetration testing on some company, as you said, which includes many, many, many disciplines like social engineering, covert entry, lockpicking, and everything. Okay, now you said you use many ex-military people for your jobs, right?
Yes, I do use former special forces as well as, people who used to work for CIA as well as other US and foreign intelligence services.
Okay, now can you tell me, what do you look in people when you choose them for a job? Because in Darknet Diaries episode 21, you were introduced as a man who makes the best teams for physical penetration testing jobs. So how do you find people who are best for that job?
Well, generally, people, and here's the thing, you know, I'm not saying every person is like this, but you look at, and here's what distinguishes people like special forces and intelligence operatives and everything else. You look, for example, and I'll cover like CIA operative training. CIA operatives go through like essentially a 2-year program, you know, depending on timing, and then they get it like field work and so on. And they're going through 2 years of both, you know, specific training as well as on the job exercises to figure out how to rapidly recognize and rapidly exploit vulnerabilities in people, as an example. Similarly, you know, it's the same similar work with, like, you know, one of my best friends, Stan, who was a colonel in Russia's GRU before he defected to the US. And he went through, again, likewise, similar operational training for the GRU, you know, among other things. And that was before, that was after he came out of like Russian military, essentially the equivalent of their Army Ranger group, as an example. And so, you know, these people go through years of training. Likewise, special forces people, you look at a Navy SEAL, and they go through, like, obviously they go through their first phase bud school, which is like the first phase is 6 months, give or take, whatever it happens to be. Then they go through their following phases. And again, what they're trained to do is, how do they rapidly, as a special forces group, people who are called in for commando exercises, they're trained how to rapidly assess a situation and rapidly exploit the situation, you know, and make use of, like, one of the best things, for example, like, you know, when Stan describes like Spetsnaz troops training, which he was recruited for before going into the GRU, you know, they make use of forwardly deployed materials as well as anything they find along the way. So when I look for people, and why do I look for people like this? I'm looking for people who already can look around a room and see what's wrong. So, like, people say, why am I good? I mean, it drives my wife crazy. But one of the reasons I'm really good at penetration testing, espionage simulations, I could look in a room and notice the one thing that is out of place, just because that's the way my mind works. And when I go in to do something, I could quickly survey, okay, everybody's going into the organization as a whole, nobody's stopping them, et cetera, et cetera. And you just, like, because a lot of good physical penetration testing, there's a science to it. And then people say, well, I just get lucky. Well, proper training, you know, it's the, you know, the more you're trained, the better luck you have, not because you're lucky, but because you happen to see the potential vulnerabilities there,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. So, for example, yeah. I'll give an analogy my friend Stu, former Navy SEAL, did. He basically, I don't know, maybe he's still a Navy SEAL. Yeah, I don't know if there's a former one. But he, like, so he spoke about when they did SEER training, which is essentially POW training. One of the things they do is, like, in POW training, where they treat people harshly, what part of the training is, they provided them with opportunities to escape, but they were just so beat down, they missed it. And like a person like Stu, who like didn't get beat down, he saw little things that allowed him to run off and escape. And like the other SEALs and, you know, Green Berets and other people did that as well. But they were trained so well. Yes, they got a sandwich as a reward. Then they got sent back and beat up. But they still kept looking for those little things. And the people who know where those little things are and how to look for them and are expecting them are the best. And training and experience is what makes for that.
Yeah, yeah. And now, can you tell me, is there any way that regular people who are not in military can practice that skill, let's say, to look for things out of their places?
Well, the answer is yes and no. A lot of it is, and part of obviously special forces, CIA, GRU training is always like there's abilities that look for it. Again, I have that looks bad, you know, put that in place. Oh, you're sorry, there's an inappropriate, you know, it's like, you look at things and it's just there. And some people have that ability. Now, likewise, depending on the level of skill you're putting yourself into, you can go through physical training. And what I mean by physical training, physical security training, in knowing, okay, how to put things in their place. And the more you know where things should be in their place, the more you can figure out what's out of place at the same time, yeah. Know what to look for. It's situational awareness training and so on. There's behavioral, if you want to get into like the social engineering aspects. You can take classes like NLP classes, but more behavioral, like, for example, like the Israeli security programs, you know, like, I mean, like airport security, they train for I forgot the exact term, but behavioral indications of problems. And there are a lot of writings that you can look towards. You know, I'm not trying to discount anybody who doesn't have the blessing of being able to go to such training.
Yeah.
But you can find similar trainings, but it's a little bit harder. And let me give one thing, like one case study I spoke about. Stan, my Russian GRU friend, has a sixth sense to him. I was once doing a penetration test with, ironically, Stan and Stu, where we were breaking into a global 500 company, and we were having massive success. And then the CISO of the company wanted us to meet with the physical security, the actual CSO, who involved physical security as well as cybersecurity and executive protection. And we went to meet with him, and we walked out of the room, and Stan's like, "I don't trust this person." I'm like, "Stan, the guy is a former deputy director of the Secret Service." Literally, he was.
Yeah.
And he's like, "I don't trust him." I'm like, okay, then the next day, let's just say we got a call of the guy complaining about us primarily. It was like a really bullshit claim, but it was primarily because we were making his physical security program look like a mockery. And he just wanted to disparage us in some way. And then I'm on the phone, I'm like, because he was like, ironically, commenting about Stu. And I'm like, "Stu is a paragon of virtue. How can you?" It's like, "Well, he mentioned something that might indicate another customer." I go, "That was a public incident reported in the news."
Yeah.
And then anyway, after I finished hanging up, Stan just looks over to me. He goes, "Told you so." But there's like a sixth sense to people like Stan who just are trained to pick up on slight signs that would indicate more serious problems, whether it's a glance. Like one of my CIA operative friends says, "You know, that's a person you don't, you know, it's like, that's a person, it's like, you know, et cetera, et cetera." I can't go into the detail, but that's a person.
Of course.
Yeah. I'm like, why didn't you tell me that before? He's like, "Well, I didn't think you believe." I go, "No, I want to know these things." I go, "What do you think about that person and that?" And he picks up on that person's needy, that person wants acceptance, that person wants this, that person wants that. And it's the training. So I'm just saying you can do that. It's better to have that, but those people aren't readily available. So get what training you can.
Yeah. Now, when we are on that topic, you said you use social engineering, right?
Yeah, I call it more human elicitation, but people refer to it as social engineering.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, one of our members wanted to ask you actually, how can someone practice social engineering in day-to-day life? Now, like one of our interviews was with a person who is not a social engineering expert, and he told us to talk to people, to try to start in conversations, to go to bar and talk to people. Would you agree or would you say something different?
Okay, so yeah, I mean, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. And you know, the first time I did social engineering was luckily, if you want to call it that, against a New York investment bank. And it was just me on the phone being a New Yorker. And of course I had massive success with it because you look at it, life is daily filled with social engineering. You have to, you know, you have to interact with people you don't like. How do you still get them to do things? You try to be nice to people.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a little bit of training. Yes, you know, I had one of my friends, John Nolan. I don't know if he used to teach a course. Another person, while I'm remembering this, John Nolan used to teach a course. I don't know where he actually gave people CIA operative training to a large extent, you know, because he was a counterintelligence officer for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know if he still does that. Another friend, Jeff Barden for Treadstone 71. He offers some interesting training as well. I'm not sure to the human elicitation aspects, but some of that is there.
Yeah.
But, you know, people who like get trained for bodyguards, for example, are trained to like interact with people and how do you do things. So there's that type of training too. And then maybe you can read books on that. But going back to daily life on how you do things in daily life, yes, you do it. You know, you can go ahead, and I saw a TV show was executed poorly. I think it was like, you know, Spy Master or something like that. And they sent people to a party to try to get phone numbers of people. And, you know, some people made up were clever, like a guy was trying to pick up a girl. Can you give me your phone number? Or a girl trying to pick up a guy. Somebody walked into the room, realized they were a bunch of models and said, hey, you know, I work for a modeling agency. You look like the type of person I can have. Can you go ahead and give me your phone number? I have a shoot I might need you for.
Okay, I understand.
So anyway, sorry, I'm babbling. But, you know, all of life in one way or another is practicing social engineering. Going to a bar is kind of artificial. It helps more. There was a show in the U.S. on HBO called How Does It Work, I think it was. And it was like, how does it work making small talk? It wasn't the greatest. But it was an indication of finding something situational or finding, you know, you have to be comfortable figuring out how to comfortably interact with a stranger.
Yeah. As one of the writers said, you have to be comfortable with being in awkward situations and to get out of them. That's a great definition by me.
Yeah, you have to be comfortable in the awkward situation and, you know, and getting out is one thing. You also, a lot of social engineering, I call it, it's like, why am I successful? You know, a lot of people who are successful, 90% of it is just having the nerve to do it.
Yeah, courage.
I mean, too many people just downplay, like they're like, for example, the Twitter hacker. You know, yeah. We talk about, you know, the case where the guy basically essentially compromised the Twitter admin system so that he could sell access to high subscriber accounts.
Yeah.
You know, that just happened a few months ago. And really everybody's saying, oh, well, we should hire that person as a security expert. I'm like, why? He just had the ability or desire to be a good liar. There's nothing special about that. You know, I mean, he was diligent in putting together like, okay, I do this, I do that. But given enough time, more with the willingness to just be a liar, you can get away with so much, especially when you don't think you're going to be caught.
Yeah, that's interesting view. Now, you said in your last few sentences, you said it's a security is more of a science, right? Now, would you look at it and would you say that security is more an art or science?
No, I actually, I used to give a presentation called actually one of my books was Zen and the Art of Information Security.
Yeah.
And I actually contend, and I've contended this for more than two decades now, that everything in life is a science. And the people who are most dangerous are the people who want to think of it as an art. So, for example, and this is a true story, I was like at a DEF CON conference like early on. And I used to go up to people and I would, who have a clue I thought had a clue. And I would interact with them and I would say, okay, you know, how do you do what you do? So one time, one of my friends suggested this one person. And I go up to him. And I go, hi, so-and-so said you're good. I want to, you know, talk to you about something. You know, I just want to find out how you approach it. And he's like, you seem humble enough, my little Padawan. And I was like, what a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I'm social engineering him. I go, yeah, I just want to see what you have, you know, what I could learn from you. social engineering him essentially. He's like, well, I basically look at a computer and I get a feel for it.
Wow.
And then I'm like, you look at a computer and you get a feel for it. I'm like, could I paraphrase for a second? He's like, you may. I go, so basically what you do is you do an initial scan of the system. And based on the scan of the system, you figure out the open ports, you figure out the potential, you know, you figure out the operating system in use, you know, any product, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He's like, oh, it's more than that. I go, okay, so once you know the potential software and services in use, you can go ahead and determine potential vulnerabilities. He's like, no, it's more than that. I go, once you have the potential vulnerabilities, you then go ahead and exploit the vulnerabilities, get a foothold on the system, perhaps install like a password, you know, a line analyzer or something on there and get more, you know. He's like, you just don't understand and go storming out.
Yeah.
Why? Because he did have like a science means there's a repeatability to it.
Yeah.
And you need people who have a repetitive process. Now, much like I say, there are abilities which add and enhance that repetitive process. Like, for example, my ability to look in a room and see what's wrong quickly. I still have the science of entering a room, identifying, you know, what are the potential vulnerabilities that exist in the room, what do those and knowing from my experience and background and research, what those vulnerabilities might provide access to both immediately and in the future and so on.
Yeah.
And there is a repeatable science to this. And anybody who ever tells you there's an art is clueless to what they're actually doing, because anybody who's good can lay out a process, even though it might be difficult for others to follow it, but they should define a repeatable process. And if they can't, it means they don't really know what they're doing.
Okay, I understand. That's quite a definition. And I must say, I agree. Now, you said that everybody could start doing security and learn about security. What is a good tip for someone who is just starting to learn about security, no matter physical or digital?
So the first thing I say about that is, number one, don't focus on security. And the
okay.
Here's the reason I say that. When you are doing, you know, it's like, what made me initially good at security? I wasn't good at security because I was good at security. At the time I began security, there was no security profession in theory. You know,
okay.
I went ahead and I did database administration. I did coding. I did software testing. I did network administration, system design, network design, adding printers to the network, which are the bane of anybody's existence. You know, I just did a whole bunch of things. Then when it came down to, okay, I was asked to hack into a system. I didn't know what was hacking into a system. I went on the then internet and I Googled, how do I hack? And then I looked at this, I go, oh, guess a password. I go, that's not hacking. That's just, you know, not resetting the default password. That's not good. You know, that's not hacking. Then it's like, okay, take advantage of bad file shares and network, you know, and like do an NFS mount on file. I'm like, no, that's just an administrator who didn't properly set permission. That's not hacking.
Yeah, I understand.
And then
All
of a sudden I realized, wait a second. I was hacking in theory. I just didn't realize it. And why was I good? But because I was doing all this work in setting up and using and maintaining systems. And then the security aspects were just kind of fell out of it. And likewise, if some, I always tell people, unless you have a true entry-level position inside an organization that is going to support an entry-level position, security is not an entry-level position, nor should it be looked at as one.
Yeah, I understand. I must say it's quite, yeah, you're right. When you look at that way, you can't, I mean, you shouldn't focus only on security. You should focus on many things, and then security will be like cherry on the top.
Exactly. I mean, you look at, you know, I'll use the example of, I'll use the example of a soccer/football, you know, European football type
of player.
Okay. So when you look at that, It's like, you know, somebody says, I see this football, you know, I see this football player and I see how they have really hard kicks and I'm going to practice really hard kicks. And you see them doing that and say, okay, I'm going to be a soccer player. Maybe I'll also practice passing the ball really precisely. And you look at that and at a high level, those are theoretically elements of football. But the reality of football is before you get to be a good football player, before it actually matters, you have to physically condition. You have to be in good shape. You have to know how to position. You have to have strength to box your opponent out.
Yeah.
You have to have all these other skills before the point of kicking the ball actually is relevant.
Yeah, I understand. There are many things behind it, not only just one thing. Okay, now you said you talked about companies and entry-level jobs. Now I must ask you, and I like this question quite a lot. In your opinion, which is more important, having relevant certifications or knowing right people?
To get an entry-level job?
No, to get a job at all.
To get a job at all, frankly, I'm not going to lie, knowing the right people, as long as you're properly prepared. So
yeah.
If being properly prepared means having a certification, yes. But it really what matters is when do you have the do you have the abilities? Because like, let's say somebody asks me for a job. I'll be upfront. Even if I like the person, I'm hesitant to recommend somebody without, for example, saying somebody approached me, they seem that they might know, I take no responsibility for what they bring to the table. It is your job as a hiring person. I'm just making a connection. Because the reality is, if somebody is going to know someone, in order for that person not to, frankly, potentially embarrass and or harm the career of the senior person providing them the introduction or the job or whatever, they have to come to the table with the requisite skills and abilities.
Yeah.
So, you know, just saying, hey, I'm going to make friends with somebody who can, you know, provide me a job, that's a small part. That's the last 20%. You need to come to that person with the skills that make you first qualified for the job. Not just because you think security is cool, but because you started practicing and developed the requisite skills appropriate for that position before you know it. But at the end of the day, if you have the skills and it's between a certification or knowing somebody, you know, obviously it helps to know someone who can help get you that job, you know, the final yard, as the expression goes in the US.
Yeah, I know, I understand quite. Now, of many things you do in your job, which one makes your heart beat fastest?
I'm not gonna lie, it's a rush to steal $1 billion.
Of course.
I mean, you know, there was one time where I stole nuclear reactor designs, which arguably in and of themselves are worth billions of dollars because, you know, for a variety of reasons. But, you know, I mean, you know, I did that. And then like later that after, and I did that in essentially in an hour. And then like, you know, that night when we knew people were leaving the like human resources area, they said, come on, Ira, let's get HR a date. I'm like, whatever. They're like, you're not excited anymore. I go, honestly, this is getting way too easy and stealing HR data is pretty anticlimactic compared to the morning.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that is quite, I mean, in the podcast, The Dark Eye Diaries, you said first time when you steal $1 billion, it's a rush. Second time and third time, it's, I know that feeling already.
Yeah, you know, there's the expression, I don't know if they have this in Europe as well, but there's the expression, act like you've been there before.
Yeah, so, I know. Okay.
After a while, you've been there, it becomes, you've been there before. Anyway.
Okay, now one of our members is fascinated by your stories and actually uses in his own class. So he wanted to hear, do you have any new stories? Because the most, the story he likes the most is when you forge security director's signature. So he wanted to ask you, is there any newer pen testing jobs you did?
Yeah, I mean there are a bunch of newer ones. There's stories I can talk about, stories I can't, stories that are more memorable than others. I mean, there was one time, for example, it was an organization. It wasn't like, top secret or something. Well, this was kind of a cool one. There are two stories I'll tell you. So anyway, the first one involved a classified environment where I was, a large defense contractor, and this wasn't like intelligence defense. It was more like, makes avionics for airplanes and stuff like that type of company, and large company. And what happened was I just, wandered in during the morning rush hour, following everybody in, and then, just saw, and then I'm like, oh my God, I'm inside a classified facility. And then I ended up just wandering around and saw people going into an auditorium. So I just followed them in the auditorium. And there I was, sitting there in a classified briefing on a new, I can't say what it was, but just let's say on a new military system that was there. It was on the fascinating side.
Yeah, that's piggybacking actually.
Yeah, well, it was just a matter of doing something like that. It was almost at the point where we're going to almost think of walking backwards in during the exit time. I don't know if you've ever seen this trick before, but sometimes if it's crowded, if you stand there and just look like you're going back, face the wrong way and slowly back up, nobody might detect you as leaving. Nobody might detect you as going in, because obviously they notice people walking in, they don't notice what appears to
I
be walking
understand.
out.
That's quite interesting.
There was another time, and this was an interesting one. So I wasn't told why I was doing this, but there was this facility I was told to break into, and it was really just like a small office, like, looked like a small business. And I'm like, what? They're like, well, it's a marketing company. I'm like, okay, marketing company. And they just want me to do, it's like they do some defense work, so they just want to see what you do. And I'm like, okay. So they just gave me the address, and I got there the night before, and I was like, looking around just to scout out the building, because I really had no information on the organization. It was a le you know pretty much last minute thing. And then, across the parking lot, because it was in an office complex, there was like a university that had a remote classroom facility. So I went up to there, and I like, had a, was able to get a camera with me, and I walked into the classrooms, and I was able to see into their rooms at nighttime. And because like they had the reflective glass, but turn the lights. But if the lights are on at night, you can see in. I'm sure a lot of people know that effect. So anyway, I was able to take some pictures, apparently with information on the, whiteboards in some of the meeting rooms and in private offices. Probably could have got some more stuff if I had a really powerful lens, but there I was in these, like university facility, looking into this. So anyway, the next day I went in there, and I was told, because I was given the thing that I was told, I asked who is not going to be there potentially, and they wanted me to get into the server room of this facility, small communication closet I thought would be, and the server room was near their cafeteria area. So what happened was, I get to the facility and I like think, okay, I have the person, and then I see one person run out of, like he leaves the door, and I just grabbed the door before, was the door closed slowly, but I grabbed it before he went in. But ironically, he saw me go in and he stopped me, and then I'm like, wow, that was new. And then I'm like, okay, so anyway, he's like, can I help you? I'm like, well, I'm here to see so and so. It's like, well, so and so is out today. I go, well, he said he's going to be back at lunch. I just got here early. I called him up, and he said I could wait for him in the cafe in your cafeteria area. And he's like, okay, well, you can't wait there. You have to wait here in this like little lobby. I'm like, okay. He's like, wait here. And then they got the receptionist, and the receptionist who actually was an admin assistant for the somebody. And then the admin assistant came over, said, oh, well, he's not supposed to, we'll try to reach him. And the guy was told not to be there because I had to get some little support. Then I'm like, well, Then they got like three other people. I'm like, all these people, and here I am sitting in this area. Then they're like, well, you'll have to wait here. I go, I can't wait by the cafeteria just so I can do some work. They're like, no, you have to wait here. So anyway, I took up my cell phone, and you know, because on my cell phone I had what was the name of the software I had? It's been a while, but like Netcat, or I forgot the name of the software to pick up on Wi-Fi access and try to do like assessment of the networks. So anyway, while I was there, I was doing that. But then the next thing was, then I realized they left me in this area and I was unattended. And so what happened was they didn't let me go back the next day with an accomplice, because what I would have done the next day, because I'm like, I would have sat down, did the same thing, and then had somebody knock on the door and I would have let them in. And then I would have let them go back. And then if anybody asked me, I go, oh, they just knocked and I thought, you know, I'm just a visitor. I'm not responsible, because the vulnerability I found was that even though they had a waiting area, there was nobody, they weren't monitoring the waiting area.
I understand.
But it turned out, I asked why, you know, then I'm like, after this whole thing was done, because I sat there for a couple hours waiting for an opportunity to wander off. And then what happened was, I'm like, okay, I want to go back the next day. They're like, no, you can't. And they're like, what would you do? And I'm like, here's what I would do now to definitely get in. They're like, oh, that would work. And the problem was, I'm like, why? This is not a marketing company. What the hell is this? And then I found out it was a CIA front operation.
Oh, okay.
As I go, nobody has this level of, there was definitely an overt, you know, a level of security beyond this, more important, a level of awareness and security practices well beyond a marketing company.
Well, that story is really, really good and really interesting, I must admit. Okay, now there's a last question about security, and it's which resources do you recommend for physical security or security in general?
So, you know, the internet is actually pretty much a blessing in that regard. You know, when people ask me what I do, you know, there are different, and I'll be upfront with you, I haven't tracked, I'm going to guess your Discord server is probably one of the better physical security resources. You know, make sure though that you follow, for example, Aziz, which are basically, as they say, you know, guards and gates, you know, as sorry, American Society for Industrial Security. You know, there's the Security Industry Alliance, SI, I think it's SIA, that has a lot of physical security information, and they're dealing with new types of locks and everything. You know, there have been some interesting things on the internet, because there's, again, a major difference. And I don't think I address this a little bit, but there's a major difference in figuring out how to secure something consistently and how to violate the security. So, you know, there's a lot of videos on the internet of people, for example, like, you know, motion sensor locks by waving a piece of paper with a, you know, like something under it. You know, sometimes there's been some, what do you call it? Like spray, like cold spray
Can
that,
there.
yeah, canned air can go ahead and open those up. So there's different resources like that. But again, if you want to be good at pen testing, you got to be, or at least assuming that's the primary purpose, you got to understand what's coming out, what are the physical security elements there. And you do have a lot of good industry organizations as well as resources for them. So, you know, honestly, I haven't paid too much attention to some of the, you know, servers like, you know, outside your Discord server that you might call like the hacking community maintains or whatever. But again, you know, you can, people probably know those better than me, but don't underestimate the importance of of the industry associations, bulletins, and so on.
That's a good answer, actually. Get informed and be informed and watch for news for new things.
Yeah, you have to know the buzzwords. You have to know the new types of technologies and so on. And you're not going to get those just figuring out how to violate the new technologies.
Now, last four questions are actually personal. I mean, not personal,
Don't worry.
but you know, you will understand. In your opinion, how do you think interest and awareness of security will change in the next few years?
So I honestly, the actual whole pandemic work from home has upgraded the importance of awareness. And I think that people will learn to be more aware a little bit because there's a naivety among even security professionals that awareness is the solution. I think awareness needs to become a must instead of a should. Because too many people think of awareness as, well, we need to make people aware, but we can't blame them. Security people need to implement a just culture. A just culture is one where people are properly informed on what they need to do while given the resources and expectation, and then you also properly enforce it. Without enforcing, for example, people aren't going to do anything. And I use the example of the Ring hacking, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with Ring.
That's security cameras and all
And
that.
what happened was, like, people were essentially criminals were essentially taking credentials that were compromised and stored on the dark web, and then taking those credentials and reusing them, like the user ID and password, on the Ring system. And people who reused their credentials were hacked. And so, until there's an issue where companies start enforcing it, I think the pandemic has got it a little bit more noted. But until there's the enforcement, I think, again, it's a should and not a must, and it won't be significant. And that's how I would answer that question.
Now, did you ever had a situation where on engagement someone recognized you? And what
I
in
actually.
that situation actually?
So there were two cases. one was actually pretty funny. So the first one, I was walking around a high-tech company, and I was with, luckily, at the time I was walking around, and one of the people on the security team were following me, and I started walking, and somebody then grabbed that security person and said, "Do you know who that is?" And then they're like, "Come over here," and they dragged that person into their room, into a conference room, and said, "You are not to tell anybody what's going on then." And what happened, though, is that person, he was an admin on a system I had to get into, and he was working like 20 something hours a day on his system to try to monitor for any hacking I would theoretically do against his system. That was a pain in the ass. Then there was another case, which was actually kind of funny, and maybe probably like another interesting physical security story I could have shared. But there was another case where I was breaking into a high-tech company, and somebody on the management team who ran their network operations center was part of the initial presentation and proposal. And he is like, "There's no way Ira's getting into my facility." I'm like, "Sure." And I was told he was said, "There's no way I'm getting in." I go, "I've got, I don't know if I was going to, but when I heard that, I'm like, I'm getting into his facility." And what happened was, I called up and I said, "Okay, I need to talk to so and so who I knew wasn't going to be there." And I go, "Okay, can somebody else help me? Because we are doing an audit, or we're planning for a SOC 2 type of audit," or whatever the audit du jour was. And I said, "We're pr planning for the SOC 2 audit, and I need to count the number and types of servers that are in your facility so we can help scope out the audit." So I got some person who was like not the person I asked for, but somebody else. They're like, "Okay, come in here." I go, somebody on my team have to come in and literally just count the types of systems. So anyway, the goal was to get in the server room, distract the person, and put on a sniffer. And what happened was, it was that facility, called up that person meets us at the front desk, and they escort us back to the server facility. And then we go ahead, count all the rooms, and then as we're leaving, the person who swore I would never get into his facility. All of a sudden, we walked past him, and his neck, literally, I thought he would have broken how quickly it swung by as I was leaving the building.
Okay, that I think he had that nightmares about that, surely.
Yeah, I don't know. I was joking with that last, you know, with the guy who we were reporting to, but he's like, yeah, we'll find out what he thinks about that one.
Okay, now, second to last question is, what is the one question you wish someone has asked you but never did?
I've been asked just about everything obvious. What would I wish people at? I mean, my latest book, You Can Stop Stupid, is really, you know, do I want people to ask me, oh, how do you buy that book? That's like a cheap question. But really what I want, I really just say, if I was going to recommend one thing, what would it be? And at this case, I really think security, you know, like I'll ask the question and answer. It's like, what can we do to best improve the overall state of security? And at this point, I think there's two things depending on how you look at it. People have to start looking as security as a must. You know, it's not a should, it's not a nice to have. Security should be built into processes. You know, the way accounting is built into personnel processes, to finances, to every aspect of an organization, cybersecurity, physical security should be built into that as well. All
yeah.
processes should have that. Then at the same time, you know, there's the other concept, and this comes down to it. The other thing I keep telling people is you get the budget you deserve, not the budgets that you need, and you need to learn business and deserve more.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just complaining. You're not going to get the authority you need. You're going to keep the responsibility, but you're not going to get the authority and budget that you need.
Yeah, that is a good question and good answer to it. And last but not least question, where can people find you?
That's pretty easy. My irawinkler.com is, I redid and then I put it on hold. I didn't like it. But Securementem, my company website, SecureMentem. Could also get me at LinkedIn, Ira Winkler. I think I'm, you know, top search for Ira Winkler. There's another Ira Winkler. I know one who's a woman in Germany. If you confuse us, that's your fault. And there's Ira Winkler, literally Ira Winkler on Twitter, IRAWINKLER. And if you can't otherwise get me and you call yourself a security professional, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Okay, Ira, thank you again for having us and for doing this interview with us.
No, I appreciate it. Again, feel free to reach out anytime.